Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald in the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Thanks for joining us today. So Donna, we've had quite a week. Boy, change from summery weather to, I think, winter's here for
yep,
a while.
Today is cold and wet.
Saying nothing about the national news, which I won't even go into, except I wish to report that I am sane and my 2 feet are on the ground because my internet service went out right at the best time, a week before the election and a week after
the election. Lana missed the whole thing.
Well, not, I did, you know, try to, and Donna called me when something important was, but what, after the first shock, it was okay to be a little quieter this time of year. And here we still are. Aren't you glad we've got community radio?
Yeah.
Boy, it kind of holds us together. Yes, my radio service did not go out, so I got out my, you know, if there's this little box, it's got an antenna on it, and you twirl it around, I was able to get KHOI, so I wasn't totally lost, but we shall see. Okay, today, on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to be finding out more about KHOI, this fine radio station, and Donna's taste buds have been shopping.
Oh yeah. Well, now that all of the wonderful flavors of autumnal produce are kind of, you know, they're past us, except for whatever we've got in storage. That's it for this season. You start wandering around for further inspiration. And of course, you come up with herbs and spices. Because I do find that in the wintertime, sometimes when you have really wonderful fresh produce, you don't want to tinker with the flavor too much. It's just so bright, so special. You know, those tomatoes, you might just sprinkle a little salt and pepper on them and a drizzle of olive oil, and that's really all you need. But in the winter, when things get a bit duller, you know, you might want to make more curries. You might want to, you know, lots of options here. So I did find the new Otto Linge book, which is called Flavor, talks about some spices that are not common around here. And so there was one they kept calling black lime. And I went, what is black lime? So, of course, I get on the internet and it leads me to this because I want to buy some because you can read about it till the cows come home. But if you haven't tasted it, you really don't get it. So we're going to try to do the impossible on the radio, which is help you to imagine the taste because you can't taste this unless you order it. But I did come across this, I think, fairly new urban spice company called Burlap and Barrel. And while this is not going to be an advertisement for them, I've kind of been, I already got one delivery from them and I'm at it again. I'm pretty pleased with them. So I got some black lime here, and Lana is going to taste it for you. First, let me tell you what it is.
Okay.
So it's traditionally a Persian thing, right? Uh-huh. Okay. It has some Persian names. I've forgotten what they are. Anyway, it's what it really is, and this product actually comes from Guatemala because it's a lime. They take the lime, probably lots of limes, and they float them in salt water for a while. Okay. Then they take it out and they air dry it for a longer period of time till it's black.
Oh, ack.
Completely dried out. And then they grind it up.
That's it?
That's it. Okay, so here we go, Lana. have a little smell and give us some descriptors.
Oh my goodness. Okay, it looks kind of like coffee.
Yeah.
Very finely ground coffee, except it's not coffee. I'm smelling it, and it tastes, if you barbecue, not barbecued a lot. Yes, it tastes
you
like.
You could put it in barbecue.
Like a burnt lime. Or
okay, now taste it. This is the fun part.
Oh, now, yeah. Okay, lime. I mean, it looks very, very much not like lime.
No, but it really has.
It's intense.
It gets that burst of lime flavor.
I only put a little bit on the end of my finger and tasted it. Ha. That's it?
That's it.
Okay. So what are you going to do with this little jar of black powdery stuff that calls itself black wine?
Well, it's kind of an, like last night. Okay. Last night I used some, I made a pumpkin or squash soup, right? So I roasted this funny heirloom pumpkin that they have at Wheatsfield that was really delicious. Normally I prefer squash to pumpkin, but this pumpkin wasn't quite as sweet as a winter squash, but it was very full flavored pumpkin. So I pureed that with some coconut milk and some Korean chili paste and stuff like that, blended it all up. And then I sprinkled in this black wine because it gives that a little acid bite.
Oh, yeah.
That balances out the flavor very, very nicely.
Now, see, I would not have thought, I would say lime. What you make limeade out of it. Oh my goodness. I don't know, put it on a taco maybe.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Even I think this will be, even though it's Middle Eastern in origin, all cuisines that use lime, which would be Indian, Mexican,
Mediterranean,
and Thai, and a lot of different cuisines, you can often squirt some fresh lime juice on the end. Well, this accomplishes that more or less. And I, you know, if I were driven to choose between this dried lime powder or that reconstituted lime juice, it would be this, hands down. Somehow that practice of salting and then drying really pulls those citrus oils out.
Oh, you wouldn't think.
I know. I'm really, this is a huge discovery for me.
I wonder, okay, I'm picturing a big vat with little, with limes floating around. Yeah. And so, but do they cut them up before they dry them?
I don't know. I mean, you look at the pictures and actually I think in Middle Eastern markets, they probably sell, you see pictures of the whole black dried lime, and you look at that and you go, I mean, I'm glad these guys grated it up for us because that might be a little bit tedious grating it. But
yeah, it would probably be something I wouldn't like say, oh, good, that looks good to eat. Let me get one. But now that I've tasted this,
it's really, really interesting.
Things.
So on their website, what's it called? Barrel and Burlap. Burlap and Barrel, sorry.
The name is a little, it's a little
cliche. Yeah, I want to say Crate and Barrel, but it's not. But anyway, their whole thing, and they have, I don't know, at least maybe more than a dozen spices. What they're doing is they are single sourcing their herbs and spices from particular farmers all over the world. And you know, buying herbs and spices, like if you buy them at the grocery store, or even if you buy them, like Frontier Co-op has the bulk spices that are available at Wheatsfield, for example, and they're usually fairly high quality. But most spices all over the world are grown by, you know, it's like buying coffee, all right? There's levels of, if you're getting a single origin chocolate or a single origin coffee, or a single origin, what do we got here? Flowering hyssop thyme, for example. It's somebody has found a farmer and helped that farmer develop a higher quality product. And then it goes directly through no middlemen to the importer. And you're getting usually a fresher product.
That's true. I have to remember that these herbs and spices, they're plants. They start as plants. And if you're growing something in Guatemala as opposed to growing it in Thailand, just perhaps it'll taste a little different. Like my tomatoes are maybe just a little different than my brother's tomatoes in Montana. Even if, you know, they're living things, and the freshness and the variety differences, it's important. So it's nice to find a fresh source, a less, well, I keep thinking, well, all the spices in the world are grown all over, but then I figure they all get shipped to New Jersey and put in a pile, and then we get it from there. No, it's nice to know that we can get it a little more.
Well, yeah, and when you use it, a company like this, and I'm sure there are others, you know, you're getting fair trade, and usually somebody would, like with coffee growers and chocolate growers, and now with this urban spice company, these guys are creating a market that gives the farmers more of the dollar. You know, they capture more of the income stream from there. So it's very helpful to the farmers, and then the importers and the people that are, you know, selling it to us, the customers, are enabling us to, you know, support people who are, you know, doing things like improving their soil quality and having fair labor standards and that sort of thing. So on the burlap and barrel, they have, for example, they have something called cloud forest cardamom. Okay. I didn't buy it this time, but the next time I'm going to buy it, it says, I'll read you what their descriptions are like. Our cardamom is grown in a single estate in the cloud forest of the Alta Verapaz, Guatemala, a biodynamic farm using traditional organic methods. The farmer emphasizes workers' rights, sustainability, and fair business practices. The terroir is ideal for cardamom, which thrives in humid, high-altitude environments with plenty of rainfall.
As in the dirt, the area.
Yes.
The area, the turf.
The soil. Perfect. The comparatively low temperatures in the mountains during harvest season, November through January, ensures high levels of fragrant essential oils. Our cardamom is sweet and tart, reminiscent of summer fruits, fresh herbs, and cut grass. The cardamom fruit turns yellow as it ripens and has a slightly softer, sweeter flavor than standard green cardamom, but is perfect in recipes that call for cardamom. Okay, I'm ordering the cardamom the next time because I want to see how it tastes. So the ones I ordered in my first order, okay, for example, aside from the black lime, try this, Lana. This is cured sumac. So smell it.
Sumac, like the
sumac, is a little red berry
that, and sumac grows in Iowa. I mean,
right, but not all of them are edible.
Oh, okay,
right,
all right.
It's common in Middle Eastern, and I really like sumac. Like one of the easiest, simplest things I do with sumac is you take a whole roasting chicken and you use salt and sumac and you tuck some under the skin and you make a crust all over it and.
Oh, this is sweet, sweet berry-ish.
And tart.
Yeah.
It's also tart.
Not lime tart.
No.
It's like a berry tart. What, a sumac berry.
See? But I have to say.
And that is ground up, too. It looks kind of like ground up red peppers, but it's not.
No, it's not hot at all. No, it's more lemony than anything.
Sumac.
Yeah, sumac. Okay, just about 2 months ago, I was out of sumac and I ordered some from Penzies, right?
Another online place.
An old one that's highly available in Iowa. And, you know, usually their stuff is very good quality. And I've been ordering them for years. The sumac was not nearly as bright in flavor as this one is.
See?
So I will continue to use this product because I think it's superior.
You know? And these come in little jars that have, what is this?
1.7 ounces? Something like that.
You don't want to buy too much at once because now somebody like Donna uses it a lot, but still you want your herbs to be fresh. Don't keep.
Yeah. The rule of thumb, of course, none of us do this, but is you're supposed to, an herb should be thrown out. I mean, a spice if it's ground particularly, because once it's grind, you grind anything, what you're doing is releasing the volatile oils and the plant flavoring compounds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they tend to dry out more quickly. So 6 months is supposed to be, you know, like if you've got a jar of ground cinnamon on your shelf that is 5 years old, you should throw that out. And because it's herbs and spices, they are not that expensive. And the bang for your buck is really worth it. I mean, you know, if you're going to be making gingerbread cookies for Christmas to give to all of your friends, you want the most fragrant cinnamon and the, you know, the nicest little bits of clove. So, I think investing in your herbs and spices are a really, really good idea. So I'm kind of taken with this company at the moment. What else did I order? Oh, Wild Mountain cumin.
Whew. Okay. Now, you're getting a little fancy here.
I know. Okay. I ordered it just because I thought, all right, cumin, how could it possibly be that different? But I have to say, cumin is, it's a very oily seed. Oh. And they do go rancid very quickly. So even with my normal cumin, I hardly ever buy ground cumin. I buy the whole seed and I often toast it and then grind it.
Ah, I should do that. I'm afraid I buy the dusty looking stuff and it just kind of sits there looking brown.
Well, I do this with pepper and cumin. It's like, you know, you don't want to like go through that process every time you want to make something with cumin. So I will, you know, I have a coffee grinder that I keep for a spice mill. I don't do coffee in it. I just do herbs and spices. So maybe with the cumin, I'll take like a half a cup of seeds, toast them up and grind them and then put them in the jar because that, you know, that I will use in like a month or two. And I do the same thing with black pepper. Like I do have a pepper grinder and I do use it some, but I use so much black pepper that I prefer to just grind it like a half a cup at a time. And I keep a little container right on the back of my stove. That way it's relatively fresh and I know how fresh it is.
Yeah. Because even I can tell the difference between old pepper and stuff you grind.
Exactly.
You can tell the difference. Oh, this Wild Mountain cumin says it comes from Afghanistan. That's good. See, stuff comes from all over.
It smells really nice.
Ooh. Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, put another one in your mouth. Even a couple, and they're tiny little seeds. I put some in some fresh boiled potatoes the other night. Ooh. I was thrilled.
Oh, now I had three little mm-hmm. seeds. They're elongated little seeds, kind of look like dill seeds. Three, kind of fill your mouth with absolute Wild Mountain. I wonder if it's they're free range cumins. You know, that's no Wild Mountains up there. This sounds like a fancy.
Well, it's better if the farmer can be growing cumin than if he has to grow poppy seeds.
Oh, very good.
But it's nice that, like, you get that initial cumin burst, and then afterward, there's almost like a camphory. It goes into several layers of flavor. I really find that kind of interesting.
This is a long ways from my little jar full of brown dust.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I will remember. That's very, very wild mountain. Well, yeah,
we got a lot of wild mountain stuff here.
Oh no, there's
wild mountain cumin, and then the other one. Oh, was the flowering hyssop thyme? Yeah. Oh, and the wild Icelandic kelp.
Okay. Here's another part of the world going from Afghanistan. Dana jumps clear over with her flavor adventures here to Iceland.
Well, I just ordered their kelp. I wanted to see if it tasted any different than the stuff that I can usually buy. And I think it's very important to eat sea vegetables, as we call, you know, like nori and kelp and, you know, things that you think of as being like in the Japanese cuisine or something like that, because the sea vegetables are full of minerals. They're extremely healthy. And I think it's kind of the future of the food. So you're tasting the kelp. What do you think? Sometimes kelp is a little flat and not very interesting.
Is there anything in there besides kelp?
Did they put no.
Really?
Well, kelp.
I'm surprised it's salt.
Well, because it's from the ocean.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like I might be sprinkling this right on my salads or something, yeah, for example, yeah. Or good in potatoes.
It's nice to know there's so much of this stuff. Oh yeah. My goodness, how fun. And in little jars and all. See, the garden goes to sleep, but this stuff is happening all over the world. This is good. This is good. Great. Well, let's take a little break here. And this is fundraiser week for this fine radio station. KHOI needs your support. Mike Murphy, our really good engineer, our excellent engineer, might have a few things to say about KHOI.
Yes, that's right. Thank you so much, Lana. We are in our fund drive. The fact is, community radio only happens with community. And that's what we're asking folks to do. When you make a contribution to KHOI, you're making a contribution to Central Iowa. And it's a great way to show your love for this area, show your love for this station, show your love for independent media and for great programs like the Donna Lana Kitchens Show. You can go to khoifm.org and make that contribution. Hit the Become a Member /Donor button, a yellow button on the left-hand side. We'd love to get some action right now. It's important that you make that contribution. You know, the overarching theme of the fund drives is from the heart. But in this year, we're also going with KHOI is here for you. What a relief. And so it's great to be able to be on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, because this show is a relief. What I like to think of this show as audio comfort food, and that it
thank you.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It's reassuring. You've got always such wonderful takes on food, not only the eating of it and the purchasing of it, but the growing of it and the whole taking a look at the big system all the way down to the little teaspoon. And you guys do a remarkable job every week. And I just want to say I've been really blessed. I got up here in Ames. I came here from Kansas City. I arrived the same time as the pandemic, but just a coincidence. And I've been privileged to be able to sit here and bring you guys in the studio via Zoom since I've been here for the better part of a year now, you know, more than 6 months for sure. And I've really enjoyed this program and gotten a lot out of it. And when people always bring up programs they like on KHOI, this is one that inevitably comes up. So,
Mike, I have to tell you something because we've been doing this on Zoom, and actually, Mike and I have not met face to face even. But mm-hmm. Let me warn you: when the pandemic is over and Lon and I are back in the studio with you, we often bring food in for the engineer too. So,
great!
You stick around. If we get through this pandemic, yeah, you'll be tasting with us.
Yeah, because this virtual eating isn't cutting it. But so again, but the important thing is that people show their support. We do have a goal this fund drive for $60,000. Of course, we just started Sunday, so we're not anywhere near that. But it takes one step at a time, and that's where our listening community comes in. I'm asking you, please go right now, khoifm.org, and click that Become a Member, Donate button. Basic membership is $60 a year. That only comes to $5 a month. The household membership is $100. The friend membership is $250 a year. And a major donor is $1,000 a year or more. We welcome and encourage, actually, sustaining members. That's those who have automatic payments deducted against their credit card on a monthly basis. That is something we could use when we're budgeting to see what kind of funds we have. and it's relatively painless for our contributors. So I do encourage you to think about that. But the important thing, go to khoifm.org, make that contribution, and shore up this important media outlet we have here. This is the People's Radio here in Central Iowa, and we're very fortunate to have this, and we do not want to take it for granted. It only happens with community support.
Thank you, Mike. Mm. Thank you. This is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Got a lot going on. Let's do a second.
Here we are. We are back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That music was a little bit of banjo music from musician Tom McKenzie from his CD called Wake Me When It's Over. Oh, dear. Oh, yes. We're talking about herbs and spices today. Donna's been on a culinary tasting shopping spree, and she'll talk more about that later. But we're also talking about this fine radio station, and we're here in the Donna Lana Kitchen with our good engineer Mike Murphy.
Yeah, such a pleasure to be here. I really enjoy this show, and now I get to be on it. How do you like that? So yes, we are in our fund drive, and we're asking people to make a contribution because this is community radio. We don't get government grants. We don't get corporate funding. We get community funding, and that starts with you. So I'm asking you to take a couple of minutes, and even less than that, go to khoifm.org and click on that yellow Become a Member / Donate button and get the ball rolling. This only happens with your support, and I'd especially like to challenge those who have not contributed before, because we do have some generous donors, but we hit them up a lot. And so to be able to increase that pool is good for all of us. So if you have not donated before, or if it's been a while, come back to the fold and go to khoifm.org. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about what brought you to this virtual table. So when I first was told about this program, I was like, "Oh, it's a great show. They've got a gourmet chef and an organic farmer." And I said, "Well, that's a perfect combination. That's like peanut butter and chocolate right there. And so it's a wonderful thing. And then I found out through the course of the auction that you made this biscotti, this Michelle Pfeiffer biscotti, that that you, at, in the course of your career, were making for Michelle Pfeiffer. So I'm curious about what kind of culinary training you've had. Is are you all self-learned? How did you get to where you are, that you are such a great cook, great chef?
Well, I'm just a small town Midwestern girl, but I landed in California and had a family to raise, and cooking was my best skill. I am completely self-taught. However, I must say that growing up, I grew up in Galesburg, Illinois, which is Western Illinois, and come from farming families, of course, on both of my parents. So, you know, when you grow up and you in that kind of community like we live in, you know that food comes from farms, and you understand that it doesn't just arrive in the grocery store. And also, I came into my professional life at a time when there were not a lot of women chefs. It was also a time before chefs were, you know, there were no network television cooking shows. It wasn't such a big deal. It was just something I did because I could do it well. And of course, I have never been a restaurant chef, nor would I want to be a restaurant chef. I actually have been a private chef to multiple Hollywood celebrities. I started off with Sally Field, and I cooked in her household for 7 years. And then I did Norman Lear, and then I did Michelle Pfeiffer. And then I cooked for Annette Bening and Warren Beatty. I also did some things for George Harrison's family. You know, I mean, this is very LA kind of stuff.
Wow.
And basically I would go to my client. I mean, it's, you know, once you've worked for one of them, you have a good reputation. They know you're not going to steal the silverware, that you're going to be discreet. You know, you're not going to really talk about their personal lives.
Except now.
Well, but I'm still not going to tell any things that I, you know, it's just, I work for them. And it's interesting because these are people who travel a lot, who can certainly afford to eat from the finest restaurants anywhere in the world. So they have pretty good culinary standards. They're also, you know, if you, you know, they have to be healthy. If to be an actor and be, it's hard work. You know, they're out there a lot. They have to look good. They have to feel good. They have to be energetic. They all of them had personal trainers. And so they're very conscious about what they eat. So I'm really pretty skilled at all the dietetic things, you know, like cooking healthy, low fat foods. And, you know, whatever my clients want, I have to be able to do that and make it taste good and look good. And so I would always say to them, look, I will cook whatever you want, because everybody, and this is true across the board, everybody has a different idea of what they say. Oh, of course I eat healthy food, but that means different things to different people. So it was not my job to go and tell them what was healthy. I would listen to them. Sometimes I would even have to talk with their, you know about their medical conditions, because, or their allergies or this or that, or whatever they wanted or what their kids wanted and da, 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 da. And, but the only thing I always say to them is, fine, I'll cook whatever you want. I'll make it taste good, but I will use organic products. And great. When I first started my career, it was like, okay, that's fine, Donna. That's nice. Whatever. A little pat on the head. It didn't mean much to them. But over the years, people started to understand. I can remember. So I cooked for Michelle Pfeiffer for about 7 years, and kind of somewhere in the middle of that, one day I came into work and she said, Donna, I realized that I have just been, you know, feeding the kids junk. I want you to clean out all of the cupboards and bring in everything organic. Now, the food I had been making for her was already organic, and she knew that. So when the light bulb in her head went off, she knew to ask me. And I, things like that would happen over the years. Like one time I had been cooking for the Benning Beatty household for 3 years, and then I wasn't cooking for them. But 2 years afterwards, I get a call from the household manager. Donna, what was that organic milk that you always wanted to buy for the kids and stuff? You know, it's like people come to this in their own time frame. But I have always been very committed to organic products and, you know, cleaner, healthier, and, you know, I used to say there are three pleasure principles. First, it has to taste good. The second, it has to make you feel good, so you're healthy. And the third one is it has to have, it does, food has a very large environmental footprint. And all of those things can line up if you're paying attention to where your food's coming from. So that was kind of what I did.
That's great. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. One of the takeaways from that is we're not going to be seeing the Sally Field silverware in the next KHOI auction, huh?
No. No.
Okay. Well, one can dream, but no, that's what I'm talking about, the caliber of people KHOI brings to you, like Donna here and Lana, who we will hear from as well. That's what I'm talking about. That's community radio. It's your neighbors, but they're bringing such rich life experience to what they do. And so it's I want to thank you, Donna, for sharing that and for bringing your expertise to our community. So that's just wonderful.
My pleasure, Mike.
We did talk a little bit. You wanted to can we talk just for a minute or two about how the Donna Lana Kitchen Show pivoted during as the pandemic?
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, Lana and I live really close to the station, and now we have, I don't know, at least 5 years we're used to showing up on Tuesdays at the station and doing it because we have a really nice studio and Mike is there now, but it was kind of like daunting. Okay, there's a pandemic. We don't want to be in a public place. We want to be able to stay home. And we had never done any of this Zoom kind of thing. And I have to say, probably some of our shows were a little bit awkward at first. But
We learned.
We did. Okay. And we were committed to, I mean, both Lana and I felt that, you know, this, of course, we had no idea it would go on this long, but that it was a rough time and people needed to know, we needed that sense of comfort. We needed that sense of continuity. We have talked a lot in the past 6 months about different things, the way we react to the pandemic and kind of, for example, our local restaurants, what they're going through and kind of how the changes at the farmers market. This is really local relevant news. It's something we, Lana and I, feel strongly about doing for our community because there's a lot of food and agricultural things. We live in the middle of the belly of the beast.
That's true. And our interest is very much food and farming. And it's funny, everybody eats, whether they think about it much or not. People perk up when you talk about food. People have food stories, too. That's why having guests on, it's fun. And we figured out how to do that on Zoom, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Boy, with Mike's help, we're really getting the technology is pretty smooth.
What we do miss is spreading out in the studio because we often brought food in and did things on air because that spontaneity was really pretty good. But we're doing that Zoom-ish now. And like Donna said, someday Mike will be able to taste all this stuff.
That's right, Mike. You stick around for that, okay?
All right. I will do. And so once again, one more time before I turn it back over to Donna and Lana, please go to khoifm.org and make a contribution to support community radio. We do have a goal of $60,000, and we think we can make it, but only with your support. Again, khoifm.org.
Well, and I also want to mention that this fundraising only goes for the operations of the station. All the programming like Lana and I, we're completely volunteers. This is not going into our pockets. This is in support directly of, you know, we got to pay the rent on the studio and keep the electricity on and the just the basic functions of the radio, because all of the programming is volunteer and a good bit of it is people who live in our community.
It is. And everybody brings their best. That's one of the nice things. There are and such a wonderful variety of people that are on this radio station. I just, yesterday? Perhaps it was. I was listening to Curtain Up with Carol Horowitz and Roger Berger, and they come on with they had a whole show about Meredith Wilson. And I was yesterday washing my greenhouse windows, the 76 trombones. Now, that helped me get through my day quite well. And there's lots of good stuff going on this station. And this is KHOI. I want to mention that you're listening to the Donalana Kitchen and at the same website that you can become a member at, that's www.khoifm.org. You can find out more about us. There's go to the talk show section, go to the Donalana Kitchen section, and we've got our old shows there. There's a recipe page and all sorts of stuff. It's a handy little thing. And we'd also like to hear from you. And it's nice to hear from you. If you want to email me at Lana@onioncreekfarm@gmail.com, if you want to share a recipe or a complaint or something or other, you can contact us and let us know what's on your plate. Yes, it is. Very good. So, Donna's been talking about herbs and spices today, and you've got more stuff to share with us today.
I have one more thing I wanted to talk about. Lana and I, you know, because she's the farmer, she grows a lot of things, and I do some herbs too, and there are certain herbs that you cannot buy.
Yeah.
You have to grow them. I don't know why this is, because this one that we have mentioned before is one of the most versatile herbs I know, and it's so underutilized, and that is lovage. And I have to say, in the last issue of Savour magazine, where they do the Savour 100 once a year, one of the things that they mentioned, and I was so excited because I have not seen this in any culinary magazine. She says, let lovage rule. And it's a very short little article. It was like the third of the 100 things. One of my favorite ways to while away a winter afternoon in upstate New York is to troll the Hudson Valley Seed Company's website in search of new heirlooms to grow. That's when I first discovered lovage. Mm-hmm. Seeds, she's talking about. You have to grow this yourself. She says, the leaves of this tall perennial herb, also known as Lavisticum officinale, brings a faintly floral, celery-like freshness into everything from roast pork to steamed mussels to creamy potato soup. But how did I really fall in love with lovage, right? Alcohol. Muddle the leaves for a botanical addition to your gin and tonic. Steep them in simple syrup to drizzle over Prosecco, or stuff whole stalks in Bloody Marys for the next level of garden kick. So Lana and I have been on about lovage because Lana has to tell you, it's a little difficult to start, but once you get that in your Iowa backyard garden, it's a perennial.
It is. It does actually very well here. Think of, if any of you have ever tried to grow parsley from seed, it's sort of like that, same family. It takes forever, and the seed packet will tell you up to 14 days for it to even decide to germinate. And it's one of those that you look at the pot and you're waiting. I grow mine, start mine early in the greenhouse or on a sunny windowsill, and it just takes forever and a day. But once it starts, it comes up looking like little parsleys. And actually, be careful. You have to be very careful when you transplant it, because it depends heavily on its root, like parsley, but you can transplant it. And or you can start it out in your garden too. But remember, it takes forever to germinate.
Right. But you only patient. Have to do it once.
Yes.
Because once you get that going in your garden every year, it's the first thing up. And it's, I mean, I can still harvest lovage right now. It goes past the frost date for quite a while. It's really, really useful. How do you use it? I've begun using more lovage than basil, for example. It has a kind of a bright, celery, herbaceous flavor. It's growing in my garden right next to the garlic chives. So they have about the same longevity. They come up early. They stay long. You can just chop it fresh into salads. It also dries. It dries spectacularly well, and the flavor is really, really preserved. I kind of cut mine all back last week, just spread it out on the dining room table, tossed it about once a day for 4 days, and then you put it in a jar. It works very well. It has a really pleasant flavor to it.
If you are used to grabbing celery as a base for soup, stews, chicken, for anything that root vegetable or that vegetable-y kind of thing for the celery taste, think of adding lovage. It's really good. I didn't know about this. Add it to your booze. Donna, you can add it.
Oh,
yeah. I should listen to the show more often. That's always been a favorite thing. And it tastes really good. It very much like large parsley. And you can use the leaves. Keep on breaking off those outside leaves, not the center stalk. Let that center stalk grow.
And it will grow up to, like, I've seen it in Helen Gunderson's garden, 6 feet tall.
Well, of course, that's her garden. Why not? But yeah, it's a hardy, hardy thing.
And lovely. It can grow with partial sun, but it's happier in full sun.
Thinking, what's an herb? What's a spice? Herb is the leaf of something. Spice is ground up other parts,
seeds roots, yeah, bark, whatever. Stuff like that.
And Donna's dried a lovage, it still looks like the little leaves are kind of shriveled.
Well, yeah, because if you're drying your own herbs, you want to keep the leaf as whole as possible, because it's like the spices too. As soon as you break it up into a powder, the volatile oils, which is what is causing the flavor in your food, starts to, you know, degrade and break down. So like with my lovage, I keep it as whole and fluffy as I can. And then, when I cook it, I rub it in my hands and powder it into the food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And store, like I tell people what to do with your garlic or your onions or most anything else, store this stuff dark and dry and cool if you can. Don't put it on the back of your stove in a jar. No. Put it dark and dry and cool if you can. And this stuff will treat you well. All those herbs and spices. Yes. So, anything else to say about?
Well, there are a couple of a couple of other herbs that both Lana and I grow here in Iowa that do very well that you cannot buy. Now, I for the life of me, I do not understand why lovage is not more highly marketed. You know, it could easily be as popular as basil. It's that easy to use. It's really nice to cut, like. Mm-hmm. You know, you could, like, you buy a bunch of parsley or a bunch of cilantro at the market, you could be buying lovage like that. But it's not. So you have to grow your own. Several other things that you have to grow your own are, and Lana and I both do this, Thai basil is one of them. Like, of all of the basil, the only one you can usually buy dry basil is just your standard green. But the other basils have different flavors, like particularly Thai basil. So I always try to make sure I pick some and dry it so that I have it to get me through the winter for those kinds of Asian flavors. Lemon verbena is another one that Lana and I both grow. It's great in teas. It's wonderful in desserts. Rose geranium. Lana made a peach rose geranium jelly that I am just in love with.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that, anise hyssop. Now that's a good one. The bees love it. And it's both anise hyssop and shiso do this thing in my garden and probably everybody's garden. You never know where they're going to come up. They kind of self-seed next year, but they don't land always in the same places. So every year the anise hyssop pops up in some different place. This year, so little of it came up that I actually, just last week, for both the shiso and the anise hyssop, I went out and stripped the dried seeds off the plant. And then I went to different places in my garden where I wanted it for next year. And I brushed aside the debris and just sprinkled the seeds on the soil. And then I piled my leaf mulch on top, because I want to make sure I didn't have as much anise hyssop or shiso this year.
Yeah, so we had a very dry summer, so some of this stuff didn't like, we all got some, but it wasn't really what a great herb year, but we got some, and that's what we need to get through the winter. Very good. Good.
So hopefully that technique will work, Lana, right?
Yeah.
Now, I just laid them on the top of the soil, right?
Right.
I didn't dig them in. I didn't do anything.
Actually, when you think how plants, without our help,
right, they self-seed
themselves.
Right.
Also, and even you can read this on seed packets sometimes, the smaller and teeny tinier the seed is, don't plant it very deep. Some even say sprinkle on the surface and keep the surface wet, which is probably kind of what the shiso seeds would be like. Mm-hmm. They're like putting pepper out. And my trick is these plants that kind of take care of themselves, I kind of throw them out and say, I don't want anything here. No, I'll just walk away and kind of ignore it. Because if I fuss over it, it's easy to think to next spring, the stuff will start coming up and, oh, that's a weed, I'll pull it up. Just be patient. Be patient.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I'm trying to remember where I sprinkled so I don't pull them out.
Part of the joy of this whole thing, this garden to table, it's really a living thing, and it's different each year. Another herb I want to mention that I really like is pineapple sage. There's sage, but then there's this stuff called pineapple sage, and although it's pretty subtle when you cook with it, although it's really good with chicken and fish, pineapple sage smells delicious. And I like to dry this kind of stuff and make herb teas to use during the winter. And actually, they make a really nice sun tea, summer tea, too. So that's a nice thing to put in a tea. Don't just think about cooking with this stuff. You can use your mints and your Tulsi basils and things like that for tea, too. There's all kinds of good things.
But I also want to ask you, Lana, hopefully, I think you did it this year. Lana does start a lot of seeds in her greenhouse and then sells them as small potted starter plants in the spring at Wheatsfield and at the farmer's market. And some years she does lovage.
Again.
So we hope you do that next spring, Lana.
I always try, and it's a hard one to start. When it starts, it takes off like gangbusters. And I did start some this year, and we'll try again next year. Yes, we will. We've been talking about herbs and spices today, and we've been talking about this fine radio station. The Donna Lana Kitchen has been doing this show for what? 6 years now?
I think so.
Boy, we've been cooking and learning new things, and now we keep going in these strange, strange times. Yes, we do. Thank you, Mike, for joining us. And you got to talk on the air more often. Mm. Yeah. And we'll have next week, we'll also be back with more good stuff from all of us. All of us. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you Tuesdays at noon. We do the show live. As if you can probably tell, we do this show live and we'll repeat it Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on this fine radio station, or anytime you can stream these shows at the KHOR website. We've been talking food and farming on this fine radio station for a long time, and we've been enjoying it too. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we've had excellent engineering and words of wisdom from Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.